Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Oh boy, it's one of those spring days where we got a lot of things we got to sort out. It's going to be a good spring. We got some cool weather coming on that's going to be good for gardening. Not the colder weather we had this past week, but cool weather. It means that spring may be a little bit prolonged. That would be kind of nice, wouldn't it? Some cool weather prolonged. I think that'll be generally good for our tomatoes and everything else, good for squash and other things we're putting in, melons. And it's about time to put all those things in, folks. After that freeze, it's now time to be putting things in the ground. And for most of you, if you're up around Citronelle and farther north, you might delay a little bit. But for most of the vegetables you're putting in your garden, it would be easier for me to talk about the things you don't need to put in yet. Hold off on your peppers. Bell pepper's fine. Other types of peppers, I'd give them a little more time. Hold off on your eggplants. Hold off on your okra. But corn, tomatoes, squash, melons, beans, all of those things, it's time to put them in the garden. It's time to start sowing them right now in the vegetable garden. It's time to get planting as well. And you got to do the planting very soon because summer is going to be here before you know it. And the drought of American summer, which starts about late April, 1st of May, we'll start seeing those dry periods. It can be very hard to keep things alive. It can be if they're not already well established, so you want to put them in right now. The Mobile Botanical Gardens plant sale starts this week. That's starting on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And it's here at a key time. It's the last really great time for planting, folks. And that's one of the nice things about that plant sale. We have one in fall. We have one in spring. It's designed for your benefit. Get out to the sale. It's a little earlier this year. That's nice. You know, I think I would have preferred to get my tomatoes in a little earlier, protected them through this cold spell. Getting them in this weekend is good. But, you know, given all things being equal, it's not a bad time to buy your tomatoes at the plant sale at Mobile Botanical Gardens. I think there might be a few left. You might be able to order some. You can check to see if they have any left over. But there's also some other great things. I want to talk about the citrus, but don't let me forget, because just by the way, my favorite orange, the orange that everyone should have on the Gulf Coast if they have no other orange, is Hamlin orange for the first time. I mean, maybe that's John Olive's fault. He's finally getting it in there. We've got Hamlin oranges for sale. I'm very excited about that, along with some other things at the Mobile Botanical Gardens. So we'll be talking more about that. What is the weather going to do? I think you're fine, but here's where I need your help. Because there are going to be some things that happened as a consequence of this cold spell last week. Let me know. If you get a chance today, give me a call. And just let me know how things stand in your garden. I'm interested to correlate. I shouldn't use a word like that. I'm interested to compare temperatures in your garden, what you think the temperatures were in your garden, whether you saw a good freeze, whether you saw water freezing, and any damage that you may have seen to any of the plants in your garden. I'd love to be able to compare those two. So let me know. And you may have some questions about damage. I'm happy to discuss that this morning because it's good to know. We'll sort it out. And I see we've already got some questions about how tomatoes are doing. Listen, we'll talk more about tomatoes, but there's one other thing we need to talk about because it's very much on my mind. We're going to talk about trees a little later and how the city's doing some right things about trees. But I'm going to talk about garden towers. Let's call them garden towers because if you're going to be growing stuff along the Gulf Coast, And if you really want to enjoy the kinds of produce that the Gulf Coast can provide you, you've got to learn how to make garden towers, garden architecture, just something for plants to climb on. It doesn't, you know, most of the plants that we do really well get reasonably large, and most of them need something to hang on or lean on or climb on. Tomatoes, the squash that we grow, same way. Melons, absolutely the same way. Beans, all the best beans are that way. Melitol, definitely that way. There's a huge list of things that grow on towers. Peas. And so you've got to learn how to build them. And it's fun. It becomes a fun part of spring. The architectural side of me, the Frank Lloyd Wright side of me, comes out. And I get to put together structures that are a lot of fun, and they're really not hard to do. I went down the street and picked up some bamboo because I needed a little extra. Got some. It's beautiful bamboo. This guy's giving it away because, you know, it's a nuisance to him. That's the great thing. Just help a friend out. Cut some of their bamboo for him. Bring them back. Bring that bamboo back to your garden. It's really easy to work with. That's a great way to do it. But there are other ways of doing it as well in your garden. Remember that most plants, you want to be able to let them climb to about 6 feet tall. You can let them get to 7 feet tall if you like. Don't let them get too much taller, because if you do, you're not going to be able to pick them. But if you use a small cage, and this is one of my frustrations, there are, you know, if you use things like a wire cage or something like that, everything here is going to outgrow those cages, particularly in a wet year like this. It's just going to outgrow them. They're going to keep growing. They're going to spill over the top. So it's nice to be able to build your own things to about five and a half, six and a half feet, depending on how tall you are. Use your hand. Don't have anything sticking higher than your hand can reach, obviously. Mm-hmm. Isn't that a good idea? Because if you do, it will grow to the top of it, and you won't be able to pick it very well. It's sometimes good to have it lean in just a little bit. And how are you going to tie it all together? You know, the nice thing with bamboo is that you can plant those ends in the ground. You can just kind of put them in the ground pretty stiffly. You can make a very simple teepee out of them, which is very easy to do. I make a kind of a trellis by crossing two pieces of bamboo, tying them together, and then running a pole across several crossed pieces of bamboo. One of the great skills you'll learn, and let me tell you about this because it's very helpful if you're building little towers and you'll need to do it, is to learn the old Boy Scout technique of frapping. Take your string. And if you can, get some nylon string or some coated wax string rather than the jute string. And use it and frap with it. And by frapping, what you do is you wrap it around a figure eight, around the two, basically, the two poles you're trying to put together in a figure eight. And then before you finish it off, take it and wrap the middle of that figure eight in between the two poles. Just wrap it over and over and over and pull it tight. And it pulls those strings together, and they don't come loose, and then tie your knot. Makes a big difference in how things hold together. It's a really cool thing. I know that doesn't seem like a plant thing, but it's an important plant thing when you're here on the Gulf Coast. We'll talk about towers. We'll talk about how to build them. If you'd like to do that this morning, feel free to give us a call. But we also want to talk about what it is you need to plant. So give me a call on that if you're in the least bit curious. I would say it's the last opportunity for a lot of things that we want to plant in the garden, whether it's lawns, whether it's tomatoes, whether it's melons. If you're here along the Gulf Coast and you're very close to the coast, you got to do it right away. Looking at the weather, you know, even up in Citronelle, I'd be sorely tempted to put out some tomatoes. Might make sure I had a little bit of protection if I was up in Citronelle or maybe in Bay Minette and farther north up towards Atmore. There's still a chance of frost. It still could happen. Still a chance of cold weather. But, you know, you're going to have lots of warm days. And that's great growing opportunity. And it's very simple to protect plants from frost. And that reminds me to tell you, give me a call. Let me know what happened in your garden. I'm curious. Earlier this week when we had that cold weather. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Okay. Let's get at this. So we've got a lot of things we got to get to today to make sure you're on track for your spring garden. Feel free to give us a call, 251-343-0106, 251-343-0106. I think Ann had sent me a picture of her house, kind of foggy. I'm not sure what she's up to, but Ann, if you want to give us a call this morning, you give me a call and let me know. Chris in Saraland sent me a picture of a beautiful camellia. He said he's never seen a camellia quite like this one. Well, it is an interesting camellia, isn't it? It's a very odd camellia. You can go on to our Flickr site, and you'll be able to see this once it gets posted by Phil. It's not an unusual camellia, I'll have to say. It's probably the most common camellia I see this camellia more often than any other camellia. It's Professor Sargent. It looks like, well, you remember those old-fashioned bedroom slippers, and you remember those kind of weird little flowers they would have on top of them with all the little ruffles? That's what Professor Sargent looks like, except it looks better than a pair of bedroom slippers. Yes, it's actually quite interesting, quite attractive. Professor Sargent and just a tough camellia, tough as nails. One of the easiest camellias to grow here, at least by evidence of the fact that it seems to have survived virtually everywhere. I think that means it's pretty disease resistant, pretty tough customer. Professor Sargent, a very ornate, distorted flower. All the petals and stamens have turned into weird ruffles all over, and it's an odd looking camellia, Professor Sargent, but actually quite common and a great one. I got to check. I think that may be named for a guy who I learned a lot from, Professor Sargent, even though he was not alive when I learned it. Charles Sprague Sargent, I think it may be. It was named for. He was head of Arnold Arboretum. He actually has an interesting history in Alabama because he came to fight at the Battle of Blakely, I am told, and was at Spanish Fort back in 1865 as the quartermaster for the Union troops at Blakely. And that's who I believe this camellia was named for. I need to look that up. I need to be a little more careful, I guess, but I think that's who this camellia was named for. Kind of an interesting thing. Ben apparently wrote an article. I don't know exactly how I got quoted. We talked about it yesterday, and David will talk a little bit more about that. The invasive Amazonian plants invading the Delta. They've been in the Delta for a long time. We can certainly talk about them and what happens. I do think as we have warmer winters, they could be more of a problem. Salt can play a big role in keeping these guys in check, but we'll talk about that as the morning goes on. If any of you have more questions about that, we'll certainly think about that. Let's talk just a little bit more, though, while we got a chance. Let's talk about this Mobile Botanical Gardens plant sale. It's coming up this weekend. These plant sales, by the way, and I should confess, they go on pretty much without my supervision, without me playing much of a role in them at all. They've been going on for quite a while at the Botanical Gardens. But, you know, they still offer a really good opportunity for you to buy things that work really well here along the Gulf Coast. And it's something we wait for and all year, because I keep saying, oh, well, if you want this plant, you know, I think it's going to be available at the Mobile Botanical Gardens. We've got some great local nurseries now, some great local wholesale retail nurseries that where you can buy a lot of these plants. But it's hard for any nursery to carry the variety of plants all the time that are available at the Mobile Botanical Gardens plant sale in spring and fall. It's a great time to get camellias. This may be some of the last time you're going to be able to get such a great selection of camellias, because Mr. Green, I don't know that he's going to keep producing camellias the way he is now. So there's some great camellias out there that are available that Bobby Green is bringing. Oh, goodness gracious, it's several dozen great camellias. There's a lot of great azaleas that I know Martin Vandergeesen is bringing. John Olive is doing his usual work, I think. It looks to me, based on this plants list, that John Olive from the University of Auburn, Auburn University, that I think is how we call it here in Alabama, Auburn University, he has done some great propagation of citrus. There's some great citrus for sale, including clementines, including, as I said, Hamlet Orange, and of course, the great Owari Satsumas. They're all there. They're really great. Look at this list of rhododendrons. Great list of rhododendrons. And by rhododendrons, we mean to say azaleas, as well as the evergreen rhododendrons. They'll both be there. Thanks to Martin Vandergeesen, he'll be bringing a lot of them. So it's really a great list. Really a great list of plants. If you have any questions about that, it starts Thursday night with a preview party. You got to have tickets to the preview party, but you can buy them there at the gate. It's a really great preview party. You get your first selection of plants. There's usually music and food. And then Friday and Saturday, it's free. And Sunday, 9 to 4 on Friday and Saturday, 11 to 4 on Sunday, if I'm not mistaken. So there it is, the plant sale. Charlie, you said we got a caller? I'm listening. Hey.
Hey.
Can you hear me, Amy?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I'm listening to you.
Okay. I called in a couple of weeks ago, and I want to redo my front flower bed. I sent you in pictures this morning. I have
no idea
what to put on. What do you advise?
Yeah. So you want to do the beds in front of your house, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so let's think about this very carefully. One, Amy, and I'm gonna certainly on the left side, and I'm gonna go back to this picture real quick. Certainly on the left side, you have some opportunities to do a lot of interesting things. At least the left side, as I'm looking at it, there's no sidewalk there, right?
Yes, sir.
So one of the things, so you're a little worried about the sidewalk. So one thing to think about when you're looking at a house is, don't think that your beds have to be exactly the same on either side of the house. And that means you get a lot of freedom. A lot of freedom, to do what you want. So that bed that's on the, facing the house, that's on the left side, Amy has a very long horizontal house, very nice looking, with a nice wainscot and nice trim. You've got plants planted right slap against the house. And let me tell you about that first 3 feet. You also have deep eaves. And that means that, one, when the water pours off the house, which it will often do, even with gutters, it makes a little trough there, and it tears up any plant that tries to grow beyond that little piece of roof overhang. The area right next to the house is usually really bad soil, and it usually is either very wet or very dry, or can be a weird combination of both at different times of year. So one of the things that I would suggest doing is, on that side of your house, facing your house, if you're facing your house, it's on the left with just the two windows there, is to think of that as a round bed. Can we do that? Can you think about that as a round bed that moves out from the house? And let's
move
put
it
a
out.
Yes, ma'am. So here's so listen to me carefully. Don't get scared. think about putting a small tree and building your garden around a small tree on that side of the house. So find a really nice small tree. Let's say it's a Formosan cherry. It's a Taiwan cherry. Those cherries that bloom very easy. Or let's say it's a magnolia, a spring blooming magnolia that loses its leaves. The tulip trees, the tulip magnolias that stay small. Or let's say it's a fringe tree, a fringe tree. Grants or Graybeard is one of the name for those trees. You ever heard of a Grants or Graybeard?
No, sir.
Oh, they're beautiful trees. Fringe trees. They're beautiful, beautiful flowering trees. And you could build the yard around that side of the yard around that beautiful small flowering tree. Now you could put that flowering tree in between the two windows, but come out about 10 or 15 feet from the house, okay? When you plant that tree about 15 feet out from the house. And then make a little circle that sort of captures all that. That pulls all that together, and then you can feel free to put lots of different kinds of shrubs there. So you could put hydrangeas around that tree, and it would be very, very nice. Or you could put azaleas around that tree, and it would be nice. And you wouldn't have to worry about the space or about it getting too close to the house, because you'll have pulled that planting bed away from the house. My general rule is don't plant within 3 feet of the house. Never plant a plant within 3 feet of the house. So that solves your problem on that side. Think of pull those beds away from the house, however you want to do it. On the right side, where you've got a very narrow bed, we're going to come back, because I got to take a break. And we're going to come back and we're going to talk about that right side, where you've got a very, very narrow bed. Okay?
Yes, sir. I ain't going nowhere.
All right.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Rain, rain on my face. Hey, welcome back. We're trying to straighten out Ann's yard here. She's got a nice front yard. She's got a nice little garden area here. But like a lot of houses in Mobile, the contractor decided that she should only plant within 2.5 or 3 feet of the house. It's like, don't let those plants get too far from the house or something bad may happen to them. Well, let me tell you, bad stuff happens to plants that are planted close to the house. It could be really hard to manage. So one of the things I suggested to Ann is on the facing her house on the left side, she's got a big area, a long area. It's the longest part of her house. Move those plants away from the house. Build a bed out. Use circles. Use an oval. Use any kind of swooping design, so that you can pull plants away from the house as many as and create a larger bed away from the house. That's very attractive. That will really improve the looks of the house on that left side. It'll look much better. Plants slapped up against the house, they look like they kind of look now, and they're kind of struggling. But pull them away from the house, you can do a lot more. And can we talk about the right side just a minute? Because I know you're a little worried about that. On the right side of Ann's house, the sidewalk comes very close to the house. It's one of those classic things where the sidewalk goes from the driveway to the front door, and it only leaves a space of, what's that, maybe 3 feet, maybe 2.5 or 3 feet.
Yes,
from between the sidewalk and the house. Is that right, Ann?
Yes, sir. Not big.
Yep. So, and she's got a, what looks like, is that a magnolia coming up on that side of the house? What is that?
It's a satsuma, and it produces a lot of fruit.
Yeah, and great.
Anyway, it's very productive. It's very good.
That's great. So what's going to happen on that side of the house is that there's not going to get a lot, you're not getting a lot of sun right there. Am I correct?
Yes, sir.
So we're going to have to think about that. So here's, and the windows are very low. They come very low. So you don't want to plant, you don't want to plant big shrubs in front of them.
For sure.
So, and what I would say is, let's think of two evergreens to go on each side of the window. And they're going to have to be very, they're probably very short evergreens. One of the things you could do, I think I would use an evergreen with very tough leaves. And in this case, I might use something like, I would probably use I think I would use a cycad, like the Florida Zamia, which is called Kunti. It's the old southern name for it. Kuntis would be very pretty. Florida, it's a type of palm-like plant, but it comes from a base, and it stays evergreen, and it would be very pretty there on either side of those windows. And they don't take up much space. That's the nice thing about them. It's not like a big... It's not like those big, cycad that you have in the middle of your yard, what we call sago palms. They don't get big like that. They're smaller, and they're not as pointy. They don't have those pointy leaves, so they're very nice next to the entrance. And that's one thing you could do. They don't need a lot of sunlight. That's another nice thing. They can survive without too much sunlight, and that would be a nice evergreen. And in between, I think I would plant coleus during the, you know, for most of the summer, or ferns or coleus, because you're not going to get a lot of light there, and the coleus will give you a lot of color there. It won't get too tall in front of that window, and it could be very nice. Or impatiens would work very well there. You could switch out from impatiens to something else. And that's what, that's kind of what I think I would do. Does that help at all?
Yes, sir. The two evergreens that you said on the right side, you said cozies?
Yeah. So let's call them Kunti, C-O-O-N-T-I-E.
Yes, sir.
It's an old Indian name that's used for these plants. You'll sometimes see them sold that way. I think they probably have them at Mobile Botanical Gardens. And you might check the sale to see if they have any. The Latin name, or the official name, is a Z-A-M-I-A, Zamia,
yes,
Floridanum, like Florida, the Florida Zamia. And you can tell them that at the Botanical Gardens sale, and they'll know what you're talking about. And see if they have a couple of those. If they don't, you call me back. We'll think of some other evergreens to put there. But we need some low evergreens with tough leaves. That one comes to mind that doesn't need a lot of sun, and that one's kind of perfect. But I may be able to think of it. There's another one that might work. There's a dwarf... there's a dwarf Florida anise. It's called Leprechaun. And it might work pretty well there. A dwarf Florida anise called Leprechaun. And there's some other dwarf Florida anise. They may have those for sale there as well. And we'll be thinking about it. There may be some other shrubs that do well in shade. And I'll be thinking about those too as the week goes on. But those are two I think you'll be able to find at the Botanical Gardens. And they'll be very nice for that side. And that way you won't have any interference with the window. And you'll have something nice and evergreen there. And then in between it, you'll have those really nice coleus that'll look good much of the year. And then if you want to over winter, you could probably put pansies there and they would do very well too.
Okay. What kind of mulch?
Yeah, so the biggest thing that you want is good soil. I would bring in some very fine pine bark for that area. Each piece no bigger than your fingernail. Break the soil up a little bit before you plant. Just take a fork and crack it. You don't need to till it. All you need to do is crack that soil. Just crack it. Don't turn it upside down. Just crack it. Put a layer of about 2 to 3 inches of pine bark. Each piece no bigger than your fingernail. That's what you're looking for. And just lay it on there, and everything should grow really well in that. You don't need to dig it in. You don't need to till it in. You can just plant where the surface of the plant is right even with or just a little bit below that pine bark, and you'll be just fine.
Yes, sir. I appreciate your help, and I'll call back if I need help.
All right, great. Good to hear from you. Thank you. Hey, Josh, I'm listening. What's up?
Yes, sir. I have a couple of questions about a few citrus trees here. I recently acquired a couple of 2-year-old blood orange saplings, and I've heard you talk about leaving some of these in pots, and I'm not sure if I need to put these in the ground, leave them in pots, and trim them. Just wanted to get some advice on how you handle those.
Well, citrus, tell me about what kind of citrus you got.
These are a couple of blood orange trees. I've got some satsumas in the ground currently. I've got a lime that I have in a large pot. Mostly wondering about the blood oranges, though. They're in just a 2-gallon pot, and I'm getting ready to either put them in a larger pot or put them in the ground.
So here's my view on so you got the satsuma in the right place. The lime stays in the pot, no question. Don't take it out of the pot because it's not going to survive in the ground. But blood oranges, you know, there are people who put blood oranges in the ground, and some years they have great crops. Most years they don't have great crops because blood oranges are much more sensitive to cold than a lot of other things we grow. They'll tolerate some cold, no question, but the flowers are very sensitive. I keep my blood orange in a pot, and here's the and I it's a big container now. It's a container that's about, oh, it's probably 26 inches across at the mouth, and it stands, the pot stands almost, well, mid-thigh to me. It's a big container, and it does very well there. And I get probably around 20 to 25 good blood oranges off that one container plant every year, which is great. Probably now getting close to 25 to 30. But here's the trick. Just when it's cold, I can take that container and lay it down so that the branches of the trees are gently touching the ground. Just lay the whole pot on its side, and then I can put a blanket over it, and I can really protect it through cold spells. And that's
I've used that technique. I heard it from you, and I've used it a couple of times with my lime, and I appreciate that.
Yep, and it works really well with those blood oranges.
What about the improved Meyer lemons? What is their best location, pot or ground?
Well, improved Meyer is fine. What matters is whether or not it's on, what kind of rootstock it's on. Is it on dwarfing rootstock, or is it on regular rootstock?
That I do not know.
Yep. Or is it on its own roots? Do you know if it's grafted at all?
I can walk right here and look at the tree. It doesn't look like a grafted base. I might be mistaken on that.
That's perfect. And you'll see a little bit of a swelling right at the base, about 3 or 4 inches up if it's grafted.
It is a grafted root. I'm looking at it right here.
Oh, is it?
Yes, sir.
So there's the trick. For a tree like that, I would leave it for a grafted Meyer's lemon, I probably would leave it in a pot.
Okay.
If it's not grafted, you can put it in the ground. But there's a problem with putting a Meyer's lemon that's grafted in the ground, and that is that the tops are pretty easily killed back. And you won't get the Meyer's lemon when the top is killed back, when it grows back. If it's not grafted, and you put it in the ground, when the top dies back, the roots resprout, and you get the same thing.
So my last question, I'll let you go. You've got me intrigued on a loquat tree. What is the best source of getting a loquat tree?
We are all asking that wonderful question. We would love to have some cultivars selected so that we know exactly what the fruit size is. Taxman and I, we moan about this every year, and then we never really find great sources for loquats that are good cultivars. It's something we still need to work on. So right now, basically your only choice is to look for seedling loquats, and since you don't know what you're getting, any source is as good as another. But they're all pretty good. They all taste pretty good.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Finch.
All right. Thank you. Good to hear from you. Hey, we got to take a break. We're going to be back.
Have a little song. Won't take long. Sing it right once or twice. Everything I got is done and gone. Everything I got is done and gone. On my watch, on my chain, on everything that was in my name. Oh, Lord of me, didn't I shake sugary? Everything I got is done and gone.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning, and boy, we got a lot of things going on. A lot of questions, a lot of information. From different people, we're gonna be looking at some of these loquat cultivars that that we had a reader let us know about. We're gonna be talking about those in the next or a listener, I should say, talk about. We're gonna be talking about those a little later on. David Hubble sent us some great pictures of his melaton, which survived. We might talk a little bit more about him. About those as the morning goes on, we had several other callers. Tony, your leaves are going to be fine on those tomatoes. Tony, just put them out. They're having a little bit of problem moving water up and down because of being overwatered and underwatered and not having enough sun, and so the leaves are developing some spots. We've got some other pictures which we're going to talk a little bit about. We still have a caller on the line, Charlie?
Yeah, Gene is on.
Gene, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, man, I come in the house a while ago, and I heard you talking about the sale over at the Botanical Gardens, but I caught the tail end of it, and I don't know what you're talking about this weekend or next weekend or when it was.
Yeah, it's coming up this coming week. So
Not today.
Oh, it'll be it's starting Thursday night and then Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
All right. I need to know that. And you hooked me up. Like I said, I was listening to you on the radio. I got out of the car and got in the house. By the time I got in the house, I missed everything. It was important.
All right. Well, Gene, just make sure you make that plant sale.
That's the easiest question you'll have today.
All right. Great.
All right.
Good to hear from
Thank
you, Gene.
Bye-bye.
And, Bill, we have Chris and Daphne.
Chris, I'm listening. What's up?
Bill, first of all, I appreciate your advice. I listened to it. It makes me think that I'm going to turn my black thumb green one day. You were mentioning about the lady that had the garden, the beds in front of her house, and you said,
yep,
don't plant anything within 3 feet of the house. What
right.
do you suggest? Gravel? It promotes drainage and... For the most part, nothing will grow there. What do you think?
Yeah, well, certainly gravel. You know what? I just the fact of the matter is, you can put pine straw there, and the bare dirt is going to be the bare dirt. But it's nothing much can grow there. If you want to put a little bit of pine straw there to keep anything from growing up just to keep the weeds from taking root, and that that works just fine. Certainly gravel can work. Gravel can sometimes be a good medium for certain types of plants to come in once it fills up with dirt, and so it can really, you know, gravel doesn't really solve the problem of preventing weeds from growing there, but gravel would be okay. One way or another, you're going to have to put a mulch over that. And I would say pine straw is a pretty good mulch for an area like that, just to cover that area up. You know, and you think, oh, man, that's going to be very visible. Nobody's going to see it at all. You'll have your plants. Your plants will be out in front of that, and they'll actually take up some of that space. So if you think if you put the root of a plant, the center of a plant, 3 feet away from the house, part of the foliage is going to grow back towards the house, and that's going to obscure it. So that creates some shade. So what you end up with is actually a very narrow area along the house that I just put pine straw.
That sounds good. All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah. And I'll just follow up on that by saying that the reason I wouldn't put, I don't think I would put pine bark because your termite people may freak out about that. They'll be okay with the pine straw.
Very good.
Good. All right. We've got another. Do we have another caller, Charlie, or have we?
We're holding lines open for those first-time callers that we haven't heard from yet.
Charlie has such a diplomatic way of saying that. And so that's good. So that gives us time to talk about some of these different things that are in here. David is looking at his architectural structure that he's got for his Melaton. It's much more, how shall I say, permanent than some of the structures that I have. But it's held up very well. His Melaton did well. I'm going to ask David to just send me a message and let me know what he covered his Melaton with, because he had 30 degrees, had 30 degree temperatures, which should have done pretty severe damage to the Melaton actually, but didn't. And I think that means that he covered it up, and just that little bit of covering made a ton of difference. It looks very green. It's coming back. A little bit of, you know, a little bit of burn on the leaves, but, you know, not bad at all. Not bad at all. It's really interesting to look at. I've got a question about whether a redbud tree grows well in the Mobile area. Daryl, if it'll grow. It'll live 7 years, and then it's going to die. That's the problem with redbuds here, is they are very short-lived. They get a lot of root rots. A little farther north of here in better clays, they'll live longer. They don't live really long anywhere. 30 years would be, in central Alabama, would be long-lived for a redbud. But here, it can be very, very short. So I wouldn't invest a lot of money in a redbud. And I wouldn't put it in a prominent place where I really wanted to keep it for a long time, because it's going to grow. It'll bloom for about 3 or 4 years, and then it's going to die. There's the issue with redbuds here. They just don't live very long. So be aware of that if you're thinking about planting redbuds. You know, I keep going back to Ann's house. It's still very much on my mind. Ann has really a great front yard and really a wonderful opportunity. Ann, if you're still listening, you know, one of the things to think about when you're designing your yard, don't let the squareness of your house and the squareness of your sidewalk fool you into thinking that everything in your yard has to be perfectly square. It can be. You can have fun doing that. You can have fun with straight lines. But one of the things when you're designing beds is think of using curves. Curves really make a big difference in how you can design your yard. So think of curving garden beds that really frame your yard. If you think about it, if you've got a sidewalk on the street, and you've got your house, make a connection between the sidewalk on the street and your house with a beautiful large curve that goes around the garden, that just sort of frames the garden. You see what I'm saying? It really is a great opportunity. And then in the areas near the street, you can plant a nice big tree if you like. It would be really nice. In the areas closer to your house, you plant smaller trees or shrubs, and you have plenty of space if you design that curve right so that the shrubs don't just slam up against the house. David, I'm talking to you too. David P., there it is, see? And then you can maybe get your insurance man off your back. I don't know what your insurance man's doing, David. That's just craziness telling that the plants are too tall. But, you know, that's one way to do it, is to have those nice, beautiful curves, have nice, big, tall plants, and it can be a really, really great, great part of your house. We got to take a break. We're going to be back. Stay tuned.
Where my parents were born. And there's a backwards old town that's often remembered so many times that my memories are worn. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River, where paradise lay. Well, I'm sorry.